welcome to RHRealityCheck.org's Reality Cast, where we inject truth into the sex and reproductive health debate. Each week, we'll be bringing you news, opinion, and advice on sexual health issues, as well as interviews with some of the most prominent names in sexual health advocacy. Here's your host, Amanda Marcotte.
On this episode of Reality Cast, a representative from the Center for Reproductive Rights will be on to explain the new Plan B rules. I have another segment covering the victory, and the military is being investigated for its rape problem. I was off for a week moving, and now I'm back, broadcasting from another part of Brooklyn. Let's celebrate by hearing Hillary Clinton defend the right to control your reproductive future.
When I think about the suffering that I have seen of women around the world, I've been in hospitals in Brazil where half the women were enthusiastically and joyfully greeting new babies, and the other half were fighting for their lives against botched abortions. I've been in African countries where 12 and 13-year-old girls are bearing children. I have been in Asian countries where the denial of family planning consigns women to lives of oppression and hardship.
She goes on to point out that family planning services actually reduce the abortion rate, basically calling out the hypocrisy of every anti-choicer who claims to be for fetal life but then blocks access to contraception. Victory! It took a mere 10 years and two presidential administrations, but we did it. The Obama administration has decided to go with what science, feminism, and plain common sense tells you and stop fighting to keep age restrictions on Plan B emergency contraception.
After years of political and legal maneuvers, it now appears that Plan B One Step, also known as the morning after pill, will be made available over the counter to anyone of any age. Women's reproductive rights groups applauded the Obama administration's decision to drop its court appeal that was intended to keep age restrictions on Plan B One Step.
Before agreeing to give up the fight completely, the Obama administration has already given in a little bit more. The FDA has approved a plan to take Plan B out from behind the pharmacy shelves and put it on drugstore shelves, like condoms. Only they still required those 15 and up to show ID to buy it, which was unacceptable for a couple of reasons. One, teenagers 15 to 18 often don't have ID, because the only picture ID you usually have at that age is a driver's license or permit, and record numbers of teenagers don't have those yet. Two, a lot of people don't have up-to-date IDs on them anyway. I've known I've gone for a couple of months in the past with an expired driver's license because I forgot to get it updated or I lost it. It happens, but you can't be expected to get that fixed in time to buy emergency contraception. So this is a big step forward. But for pro-choicers, there is still work to do.
Just to be clear, the administration is not proposing that all forms of emergency contraception be made available over-the-counter without age restrictions. In fact, the Justice Department and the Food and Drug Administration are suggesting on-the-shelf availability for only a single product, Plan B One Step.
So there are many kinds of emergency contraception, but only this one kind will be available over-the-counter. That's a big problem in terms of consumer choice, but beyond just that, it's also a problem for availability.
But there's a more important reason those who've been pushing for broader availability of the drug are unhappy with the administration's proposal. Plan B One Step is the only brand name product now available and is thus the most expensive. It retails for between $40 and $50. Susanna Baruch heads the Reproductive Health Technologies Project.
And this is not a minor issue. It has a real impact on giving all women meaningful access to emergency contraception. We know generics tend to be $10 to $20 cheaper than the name brand, and that can make all the difference for many women.
But by getting one product on the shelf, it will likely be easier to get more. So there's reason for optimism, even if the fight is ongoing. The right-wing reaction was predictably over-the-top hysteria. Laura Ingraham got completely out of control.
I mean, it's a good deal for pedophiles, good deal for people who commit statutory rape against young girls. And if mothers and fathers across this country hear this and they think, well, I guess my daughter or her boyfriend or her rapist can go out to a pharmacy and get a bunch of, you know, hormone pills to give a little girl, we don't really know the long-term effect of,
nope.
of a spiking or dropping a little girl's, in many cases, a young woman's or a little girl's hormonal levels.
This argument is always made as if the alternative, unwanted pregnancy, is so obviously better that it hardly needs to be defended. But pregnancy creates a much larger hormone spike in the pregnant person, including the young girls Ingram mentions, and it not only is bigger but lasts weeks if you get an abortion or 9 months if you don't. So if your concern is hormone spikes, then pregnancy is not the better option. Also, the claim that the best reaction to rape is forced pregnancy remains the same naked misogynist nonsense it ever was, a barely watered-down version of the prison sentences and even executions that rape victims in more fundamentalist countries face as punishment for lack of chastity. Punishing victims is not a way to get their victimizers. On the contrary, it gives the victimizer a chance to further hurt and control his victim. I'd like to welcome Janet Krebs to the program. Janet is senior counsel at the Center for Reproductive Rights, and she's here today to help us understand all the intricacies of the plan for Plan B emergency contraception and what parts of it aren't good enough and need to change. Welcome to RealityCast, Janet.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So let's start from the top. Why did the Obama administration change their tune on making Plan B emergency contraception available without age restrictions?
Well, I would like to say it was because they see the wisdom of changing this policy that has perpetuated unnecessary restrictions on emergency contraception. But that's not really the case. The administration found itself between a rock and a hard place, which was they were going to be required by an order of the Second Circuit Court of Appeals to make the two-pill levonorgestrel products available immediately without restrictions. At that point, they assessed their options and decided that the better course, which was open to them by the district court, was to make Plan B one step available without restrictions and not the two-pill products.
So now, this decision has all sorts of like restraints on it. Can you kind of explain in detail what will and won't be available over the counter without age restrictions?
Sure. So let's start with the one and two pill levonorgestrel products. So the two pill products have had a shrinking market share over the course of this protracted process to try and get emergency contraception over the counter, because the medicine has evolved and has gotten to the place where one pill instead of two pills is equally effective. So the two-pill products will not go over the counter. That leaves then Plan B one step, which will go over the counter, but also generics of the one-pill product, which are currently on the market, but subject to a lot of unnecessary restrictions. So at this point, what we know is it's clear that two-pill products will not go over the counter, that one product, Plan B One Step, will go over the counter, and that the status of the generics of the one-pill product is unclear. And it's unclear because the FDA may decide to give Teva, the manufacturer of Plan B One Step, 3 years of market exclusivity to put their product over the counter without restrictions. What that would mean is that that would essentially be the only product available over the counter, and it would likely come, at a higher price than the generics. So women would have the choice of the convenience of unrestricted access to one product at a higher price, or they could seek access to these other one-pill products behind the counter with proof of age and maybe save themselves a significant amount of money.
So just to clarify, why is there a two-pill Plan B at all anymore if the one-pill one is just as good?
The two-pill products exist because they were put on the market before the one-pill products. And the manufacturers of those products haven't seen any reason to withdraw them. And so if you were to go into the, into the pharmacy, you would see a variety of products. some of which seem kind of outdated maybe compared to some of the other products, but they're still on the shelves and they still have a market share.
So clearly the generic situation is the much more troubling one.
Yes, it is. At this point, the best outcome for women in this country would be to have a variety of one-pill products available, including Plan B One-Step and generics, which could be purchased at a lower price.
So the Center for Reproductive Rights and the other plaintiffs in this ongoing lawsuit against the FDA trying to force them to make emergency contraception available without restriction sent a letter to the federal judge, Edward Corman, in this case protesting some of the Obama administration's kind of, how would I put this, hesitation, teeth-pulling behavior.
All of those are accurate.
Can you explain what the letter says?
Sure. We felt like the government's proposal was the absolute most narrow way that it could possibly comply with Judge Corman's order. But we felt there was some ambiguity in Judge Corman's order that maybe he would require them to do more. And so we asked him to require the government to make the two-pill products available over the counter without restriction. And Judge Corman, in response, said, no, what I meant by my order is that the government can satisfy my order by making Plan B one step available over the counter without restrictions. But he went on to say, but I really hope that the government will also make the one-pill generics available, that there's no reason to reward Teva with 3 years of exclusivity when the burden of that will fall directly onto low-income women for whom this product will be expensive.
Well, and Teva wasn't the ones who had the lawsuit in the first place, right? It was a citizen's petition.
That's right. And so even though we think this is a very significant victory and that it's going to benefit women in this country tremendously, it's a little ironic that a private company, Teva, is perhaps going to benefit from this more than anybody else, because if they get 3 years of market exclusivity, obviously, that's going to give them a huge competitive advantage.
So one thing I want to kind of talk about a little bit is the effects of this, because obviously Fox News, Rush Limbaugh, the right-wing media was just completely melting down. Specifically, Laura Ingraham went on Fox News and said that this is like the best thing that could ever happen for pedophiles and child rapists. Obviously, the Center for Reproductive Rights disagrees. Can you sort of explain why that's just not true?
Sure. There's a bunch of misstatements of fact embedded in those claims. First, as to the sexual behavior of younger minors, there's just no correlation between access to emergency contraception and whether or not a minor decides to engage in sex. That really, influence on that behavior comes from parents and not the availability or unavailability of an over-the-counter product. But the same is also true as to whether sexual predators can take advantage of this now to hide their crimes. There's absolutely no evidence of that, and it's just really a hollow claim to deny millions of women, adult women and minors, of access. So it's actually a kind of a vicious way of denying women access to reproductive health care by trying to focus on a problem for which this is not the solution. I don't hear these people who are arguing against access to emergency contraception providing any real solutions to the problem of sexual predators, such as greater education for minors and enhanced law enforcement attention to these problems. And so to try and pick out access to emergency contraception as a solution or an enhancement of the problem is really ridiculous.
It's particularly galling to me because it seems statistically a lot of the very young, what we're talking the under 15-year-olds that are victims of sexual predators, it's often their own family members, right?
That's right. And the fact is, the evidence is clear that the younger minors are not accessing emergency contraception. So whatever the circumstances of their unprotected sex, it's simply not happening that they are, as a result, accessing emergency contraception. So it's just ridiculous, really, again, to say, let's burden millions of adult women. Let's force potentially hundreds of thousands of unplanned pregnancies. It's just clearly a ruse to try and further their agenda of no abortions and no access to contraception. I mean, you'll see these same people are objecting to any kind of expanded access to contraception in healthcare or in other venues.
My guest today has been Janet Kreps of the Center for Reproductive Rights. If you go to their website, which is reproductiverights.org, you can learn more about this case, their petition, and many others that the center works on around the world. Thanks for coming on to RealityCast, Janet.
Thank you so much. It's exciting to be here on a day when it looks like we're finally going to get access to emergency contraception.
Yeah, how often do we get a win anymore?
We have to enjoy them.
So the Senate decided to have hearings on the issue of rape in the military, which is an epidemic in no small part because of massive failures in military leadership to deal with the problem effectively. Because of this, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York has started to push for legislation, which has been effective in other countries, removing rape prosecution from the chain of command and having a more straightforward criminal justice approach. Her reasoning is clear enough, which is that a lot of commanders tend to treat rape like it's just another form of sexual harassment, which is to say more like an HR issue and less like a criminal matter. She is very, very clear about this.
Because the commander, while you are all so dedicated and determined, not all commanders are objective. Not every single commander necessarily wants women in the force. Not every single commander believes what a sexual assault is. Not every single commander can distinguish between a slap on the ass and a rape, because they merge all of these crimes together.
Straightforward, commonsensical, which is why the conservative reaction ranged from incoherent to bizarre to shockingly misogynist. They hate being accused of waging a war on women, but they are no more going to stop doing so than they're going to stop over-the-top pandering displays of patriotism. It's just who conservatives are. Even though in this particular case, male-on-male rape seems to be as serious a problem as male-on-female rape, which means that calling this a woman's issue is even more asinine and offensive than usual. Not that this prevented Senator Saxby Chambliss from saying that rape is just what happens when you expose young men to actual women.
The young folks that are coming into each of your services are anywhere from 17 to 22 or 3. Gee whiz, that's the level of the hormone level created by nature sets in place the possibility for these types of things to occur.
Needless to say, there's no evidence that rape is a result of hormone levels or extreme sexual desire at all. As ever, rape is a crime of violence that is usually motivated much more by the rapist's desire to dominate the victim than any sexual urge. In fact, the military specifically has a problem with men raping men, and most of those rapists who rape men are straight-identified men. It's not an expression of sexual desire at all, but an attempt to put someone in his or her place. Right-wing media got even weirder about this, if you can imagine. They know that they should be against these hearings because icky feminists are pushing for them, but it's not like they can just come right out and say they don't think rape is a problem. So instead you get weird behavior like Andrea Tantaros's of Fox News.
Sex crimes in the military, they are a real issue. There's no doubt about that. I'm not going to just poo-poo it and say that that's not. What baffles me, though, is the way they prioritize these issues, the timing and the tone of them. Okay? If these were liberal groups that were targeted by George W. Bush, They would not be covering sex assault in the military.
She was claiming that MSNBC is way off base, giving airtime to the military sexual assault hearings while there's supposedly some scandal brewing with the IRS. On its surface, that's nonsense because it assumes that a handful of Tea Party groups having their nonprofit status denied is a far more serious concern than the over 25,000 sexual assaults reported in the military last year. Even if you accept that the IRS scandal is a real scandal, which is certainly not a universal thing to believe, it defies common sense to say that it's more important than dealing with rape in the military. Meanwhile, Michael Savage had Alan West on his show, and they were completely off their rockers.
When you say sexual assault, according to the new liberal interpretation of such a phrase, does that not include, hey, honey, let's go for a beer? Could she turn him in and say that was a sexual assault because it was an unwanted advance?
Well, she could. I mean, that's...
All right. So amongst the 23,000 so-called cases that the Commander-in-Chief Obama talked about last or 2 weeks ago at a commencement address, how many of them are fraudulent claims? We don't know, do we?
Of course, as Gillibrand's quote at the top of the segment made very clear, the feminists pushing this are explicitly and aggressively demanding a distinction between fraternizing, sexual harassment, and actual assault. These two are just telling lies to get their audience whipped into a needless, paranoid frenzy about this by telling them that Senator Gillibrand is doing the opposite of what she's doing. That's the level of discourse going on right now. Lies, distractions, and paranoid fantasies. Anything, apparently, but actually deal directly with the issue. And why? Is it just because conservatives have a knee-jerk hostility to anything feminists set out to do? Or is it because they don't really want to treat rape in the military like it's a crime? It's honestly hard to tell sometimes. Unfortunately, Gillibrand's proposed bill was killed off with a whimper, but hopefully we can keep the heat on the military. And now for the Wisdom of Wingnuts, Getting It All Backwards edition. Here's Bill O'Reilly suggesting that the existence of a black market abortion provider who exploited women who couldn't get legal abortions means that we should, you guessed it, make it that much harder to get legal abortions.
Andrew Cuomo wants to make abortion laws even more liberal in the Empire State. 41 states restrict late-term abortions, and New York does as well, saying you can't destroy a fetus after 24 weeks unless there's a threat to the mother's life. Cuomo wants to change that, making a threat to the mother's health the law. Of course, that could mean anything, as we saw in Philadelphia with the monstrous Dr. Gosnell.
One question for anti-choicers who claim Kermit Gosnell was providing legal abortions. Then why is he going to jail for it? You can't be tried and convicted for something that is legal. Gosnell wasn't in the business of performing medically necessary late-term abortions. He was in the business of lying to women about how far along they were and then performing illegal late-term abortions. Banning legal, necessary abortions won't stop another Gosnell, but it will make sure that someone who operates illegally, like he did, will get more customers.
That's it for this week's edition of RealityCast. Please tune in next week for another dose of reality in the sexual health debate. Visit www.rhrealitycheck.org and sign up for a weekly e-newsletter, various news feeds, and daily emails. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.